Welcome to The Wonder, exploring perspectives, rituals, and observances of modern, naturalistic, earth-revering, pagan religious paths. Here are your hosts, Yucca and Mark.
Welcome back to The Wonder, science-based paganism, and today we're going to talk about magic. I'm your host, Mark.
And I am Yucca. Welcome.
So, magic. Big topic in the pagan community. We decided before we started recording that we would start by talking about definitions, because one of the things that gets murky really fast when talking about magic is exactly what people are talking about. So, Yucca, why don't you go first? How would you define magic?
Well, I mean, first of all, there is the magic of Harry Potter, right? That kind of, you know, magic is in something that doesn't really exist. Like we use it that way. But when we talk about magic, usually when we're talking about magic in paganism, it's something that people mean in a sincere way. And it's a term that I will use. And for me, magic is something of a catch-all term for practices which are to influence one's own perception of the world. I don't know who the original person to come up with this definition is, but I heard this one from Starhawk, who said that magic is the art of changing consciousness at will. And that was
Aleister Crowley originally.
That was him originally? Okay, yeah. Well, I quite like that as a definition, that it's about changing at least one's own consciousness. So practices, everything ranging from ritual work to meditation to lucid dreaming, things like that, I would call magic. I'm not particularly worried about calling it by a different name, because I do recognize that for some people that's a little bit of a trigger word. For me, I like using it because it kind of lets me loosen up and shush away that inner critical voice that is taking everything so seriously and so critical that it can get in the way of me just relaxing and doing whatever it is that I'm trying to do in a ritual. So how about you, Mark?
It's such a complicated question, really, because there are a bunch of different definitions. And I agree with you that the word magic is a playful and imaginative word. And being playful and imaginative is kind of a key stance when it comes to participating in ritual. The trance state is an inherently creative and imaginative state. And as we submerge ourselves into our rituals, the idea of doing magic is really cool.
Mm-hmm.
But I often hear, and I agree with you about changing consciousness at will. I believe that the human mind has tremendous ability to influence its own psychological state, its perspective on things, and its own body in terms of healing and metabolic rate, all kinds of things. What I don't believe in is doing a ritual and having something happen 150 miles away and having the ritual having had something to do with that event 150 miles away. I don't see any evidence for that. And until that evidence comes along, I'm just very, very skeptical about that sort of thing. And one of the reasons that I'm skeptical about it actually, it stems from the natural world. Every force or power existing in nature is taken advantage of by some kind of creature in our ecosystems. Even electricity, we have electric eels, and there are a couple of other kinds of animals.
Well, our own bodies when we start getting into synapses and all of that, where we are electrical as well.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Of course. But when I look out at the biosphere of Earth, I do not see a magic-wielding creature. I don't see any kind of a creature that's able to influence the probability of events in order to benefit itself. And it seems to me that evolution would have done that if there was such a power. So that's kind of where I sit with it. I prefer not to use the word magic very much, because I think it's so easy to mistake the magic of changing your mind and changing your relationship to the world with the superstitious kind of magic, which is, carrying a rabbit's foot and being lucky, that mm-hmm. kind of thing. And so it looks, we may look at this a little bit differently, and that's fine. I'm still a big believer in ritual and its ability to do good things for us in our minds and in our bodies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we'd been doing a little bit of talking before we started the podcast officially. And I think I had said that when we do ritual, and we're changing our own self or the way that we are experiencing, that I think that can have very profound influences on how the world or other people or other things respond back to us. And that's where I suspect a lot of the power of these magical practices or magic comes from. We had also touched a little bit on the idea of that I was talking about leaving open the possibility that I think that we have a very poor understanding at this point of how reality probably actually works, that our current models most likely are very inadequate to the level at a point where we don't even understand it yet. And so that for me, I want to leave open the possibility that, or be cautious about not, I think I used the expression with you, throwing the baby out with the bathwater, that perhaps there can be value or some, there could be things going on that we really don't understand yet, but some of our practices around it may have picked up on working with how whatever's going on, even if we don't understand it yet. Of leaving open the possibility that there's a lot more going on than we probably understand.
Mm-hmm.
And being okay with that. Being saying, if it seems like it's meaningful, if it seems like it's working, then it's probably my idea of why it's working is probably incorrect, but if it's helping me in my process, then I'm okay with that. Although being very skeptical to the idea that yes, I'm changing what's happening 150 miles from here, or that if I just think hard enough, then Trump won't get elected or something like that.
Or that if enough of us think hard enough, mm-hmm. because one of the things that tends to go along with that sort of model of thinking about magic is that it seems to assume that people are kind of like batteries, and that the more of them you have involved with something, the more powerful or effective the ritual will be.
Mm-hmm.
Which is something else that I find kind of problematic. But I completely agree with you that we don't know everything about how the universe works, and that it could be possible that that there's some nexus between consciousness and physical activity without the intervention of physical movement, you know, use of a body to move an object or something like that. But we don't have much evidence for that. And so I choose simply not to subscribe to it, being open to the idea that more evidence could come along. But in the meantime, you know, rather like Bigfoot, I don't believe in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think where we definitely are aligned there is in the idea of saying, well, if keeping the idea that there may be evidence eventually, but we don't see it at the moment, keeping that idea in mind.
Right.
And basing our actions off of what do we currently have evidence for, right? How can we understand the world based on what we do, what we can verify, mm-hmm. what we can test at the moment?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I have a personal experience of one of these sorts of things. When I was 7, 8 years old, something like that, during a thunderstorm in Colorado, I saw ball lightning. It lasted for maybe 3 seconds, and it rolled along the ground, and it was ball lightning, which has been reported many times. And the current scientific position on ball lightning was it couldn't exist. Mm-hmm. Because they couldn't find any kind of a model that would enable electricity to do that. Turns out, yes, there is. It turns out that it's a big ball of plasma that's encased by a magnetic field that rapidly goes to ground. So it's only, you know, barely instantaneous, but the phenomenon does exist. So, you know, I am familiar with the idea of the scientific kind of institutional position being bigoted against something that it can't understand. I just haven't seen any evidence yet that, I mean, there was abundant anecdotal evidence of ball lightning and even photographic evidence of ball lightning, but it was discounted.
I have to say is a very poor behavior on the parts of any scientist who is saying it does not exist, it cannot exist.
Absolutely.
Instead of saying, our evidence does not suggest that this would be likely. We do not have, at this time, we don't have evidence. You know, that is a much more appropriate way to frame it and look at things like that rather than saying, nope, can't be, doesn't work that way. You know,
I agree.
That's a very unscientific way to behave. Yeah.
I mean, scientists are human. Mm-hmm. And many of them are very, very smart people. And so they can get their egos all wrapped up in how smart they are. And I was raised by one of those. So they can, you know, get in the habit of making declarative statements about what is and is not true. And that is not truly the scientific method.
Yeah.
The scientific method is to say, well, we don't have any evidence of that. Or we don't have any understanding of how that could happen.
Mm-hmm.
We have countervailing evidence that indicates that it's unlikely that that could happen, but not, it doesn't happen.
Yeah. And I think all of that contributes quite a bit to the confusion that we have as a whole culture as to what science actually is, and what are we, when we say science, what are we actually saying? What are we making reference to? Are we making reference to science as a process of learning about the world? Are we making reference to science as in the body of knowledge that we have gathered through science, or are we saying science like the institutions, as you were saying?
Right. The thing about science is that it's been very successful in making some very kind of hard-edged determinations. The world is semi-spherical. It's not mm-hmm. flat. We know this, and we know this because of science.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the jury is no longer out on whether the world is semi-spherical or not.
Yeah, there's pretty well consensus on that, despite a few groups might want you to. Yeah, that's a bizarre. It just boggles my mind every time I come across and have to wonder, do these people really believe this, or are they just really trying to get everyone's goat here?
I think there's a combination of both. But there is such a deep anti-institutional, anti-expertise movement in this country now that I completely believe that there are people out there who believe that the world is flat and the moon landings were falsified, and that even though we can see the cycles of the moon relative to the sun and how the moon is illustrated and is definitely spherical, that the earth is flat, period. And I pity them.
Yeah, and that anti-intellectual sentiment is not a new thing, in at least we're speaking from the being Americans in the United States. I know that different parts of the world have different relationships with that, but that certainly is not a new phenomenon for us.
Yes.
We've seen that for quite a while. Yeah. Well, we can move away from that, because I'm sure we can talk about, you know, 20 different reasons why you can easily see that the world is spherical and the moon is as well and whatnot. I mean, it just takes a... Anyways, let's move on from that. Yes. It works. It works to get my goat.
Yes. Well, there you have it. So there is the question about, you know, what exactly is magic? How do we define it? And depending on how we define it, does it exist? But if we define it as the ability to work with our consciousness in a way that has influence over ourselves and our bodies, I don't think the jury's out on that one at all. I think we have overwhelming evidence that we, you know, people have spontaneous healing experiences that can't be explained by medical science. there's an abundance of evidence that through processes like meditation and trance ritual and even some of the kinds of practices like faith healing and so forth, even though they're fraudulent in terms of actually doing what they say they're doing, they influence the patient's mind enough that the patient can get better in many cases.
Mm-hmm.
So I really think of ritual as a set of psychological technologies, and that magic is the use of those technologies in order to hack our brains in a way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I think that sounds like we're in agreement on that. And I suppose it comes back to whether one wants to call it that or not. Like you were saying at the beginning, that it can sometimes lend itself to, using that term can kind of lend itself to going further with that. That kind of thought that, you know, if I just think hard enough, then I will be able to completely create my own reality and, you know, that sort of thing. I think we've mentioned before on this podcast talking about being a little bit critical of the idea that, you know, if you just want hard enough, you can change your reality. Like, you know,
right.
Children with diseases that were born with, you know, leukemia or something like that. If they just think hard enough, they can, or want it hard enough, they can somehow get rid of that.
Or if their parents want it hard enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, If that were true, there would be no such thing as a prisoner. There would be no such thing as a slave. There would be no such thing as a person in a abusive relationship.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it might solve a lot of problems, but it would probably create a bunch more. You know, when I think about the various models for inherent justice built into the universe that different cultures have come up with, concepts like karma or the Wiccan threefold rule, mm-hmm. all those are predicated on the idea that there is a force for justice in the universe. And honestly, I don't see it. I mean, Joseph Stalin died in his bed, perfectly comfortable. And the thing that I see is that justice is a concept that humans have. And that doesn't mean that it's meaningless at all, because it has great meaning. But that doesn't make it an inherent law of the universe. There's a difference between those two things.
Hmm. Well, if we mention magic, I think we can't not mention the idea of spells or spell work. Mm-hmm. So what is your take on that, on what a spell or spell work is?
I see spell work as being a ritual that is focused on intention. So when someone does a spell, it is designed to change their mentality about something. I mean, I've done, there's actually a ritual on the atheopaganism.org website called Unfrozen that's about procrastination. Mm-hmm. And procrastination has been a terrible, terrible problem in my life because I suffer from depression. And depression is basically a failure of production of enough dopamine. And dopamine is the initiative hormone. It is the neurotransmitter that gives you get up and go to do stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So procrastination has been a recurring theme in my life. And, you know, one of the things that's been really amazing about having medication that effectively deals with my depression is that I have so much more get up and go than I used to. But I wrote this ritual about procrastination, and the idea there was to create a symbolic experience to literally break the ice that a procrastinating person is frozen in and get them moving again. And to do that in both literal ways, like in the middle of the ritual, go and do something you've been putting off that won't take very much time. Go and do it right now.
Oh, that's great. Okay.
As well as, you know, writing the things that you're stuck on, freezing them into a block of ice, writing with a pencil because you don't want to consume ink, and then literally putting that on a pot to boil and making tea with it and drinking tea while figuring out how you're going to take care of the other things that you need to work on. That's the broad strokes of the ritual. You can look it up if you're interested. I think it's a fun one myself, but if someone
that sounds delightful. Yeah.
If someone goes through all those steps, something's going to shift in them.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that they made themselves go through all those steps means that they're already on the move. They've already started doing something that can lead them in a productive direction. And so I think that spell work is about how we work with our own fears, our own desires, our own aspirations, our own insecurities, in a way that bolsters our effectiveness and makes us better in the job interview, better in the performance review, better in the relationship challenge, better in whatever it is that we're working to accomplish.
Mm-hmm. Great. Yeah. I think that's a fantastic description of it. And I very much share that seems like it's, the idea is it's, there's a goal, right? It's that there's intention there. It's not just, it's not just sitting down and meditating, although that's a fantastic thing to do, but you know, it's not, it isn't necessarily doing some sort of just opening yourself up for some sort of like divination. It is really working towards achieving something.
Right.
Through symbols, right?
Right. Right.
And that's why one might have things, certain symbols they're using, like you're talking about with the teapot or, yeah.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, intent is coupled to will, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we in the pagan world talk about will a lot. And there are people who, some people make a differentiation between will with a small W and will with a big W. I don't do that so much.
You haven't come across that? What is the, no, yeah, what is the distinction that is being made there?
Well, the distinction is that the capital W will, which I believe was innovated also by Aleister Crowley,
mm-hmm.
Is that that is the intent of your divine self, of your highest self. Whereas small W will might be whims or addictions or
okay.
kind of just smaller, less important, more trivial things that aren't as central to the essence of who you are.
So will might be part of like your spirit or soul, if one uses that kind
yes.
of cosmology. Okay.
Yes. Yes. I've just pulled up Unfrozen. Yes. The name of the post, we'll put it in the podcast notes.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Unfrozen, A Ritual for Getting Unstuck. This was a while ago. I wrote this last August. Yeah, it's fun. I think it's sweet. And one of the joys that I find in doing ritual work and in doing designing rituals for particular purposes, which you might as well call a spell,
mm-hmm.
is that it's a very creative thing. You can be so playful in all those different ways. I mean, when I was, you know, thinking about, okay, I'm stuck. Well, what's that like? Well, I'm frozen. All right. Well, if you're frozen in a block of ice, what do you do? you try to melt the ice. Okay. Well, let's melt the ice. let's do that. We're going to find a way to make this actually, manifest in the world. So, I find ritual design and innovation in ritual creation to be just a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
It's a creative process that I really enjoy, and I consider it an art form. It's a psychological art form.
Yeah. Well, that kind of brings back what I was saying in the beginning about, for me, choosing to use the word magic is because for me, it has that fun. It has that letting go feeling to it. But I know that for a lot of people, it has a very different connotation, and that it may not be useful for everyone to use that. It may make it feel cheap or cheesy or fake. So I think that these terms are themselves tools, whether we choose to use them or not within our personal practice. Is it going to be helpful for you to think of it like a spell or think of it like magic or not?
Absolutely. And your own associations with those words will, of course, determine, you know, what your decision is. I think part of the reason that I don't like the word magic is because it's so general.
Mm-hmm.
Because Harry Potter is magic. The Lord of the Rings are magic. Photosynthesis is magic. Niagara Falls is magic. The bioluminescent grotto in New Zealand is magic.
Yeah.
There, you can use that same word to describe a whole lot of different things and mean something different by it every time. It's almost as bad as the word love,
mm-hmm.
which is just such a grossly inadequate word for all the different ways that we can feel affection for people. I mean, at least the Greeks had three words for it.
yeah.
And, you know, we could probably come up with seven or eight that would, you know, that would be very pertinent and useful in our language. But of course, the English-speaking language, the English-speaking world has not really invested a whole lot of its effort in love, frankly. We've got plenty of great terms for administration and accounting, but not so much for love.
Yeah.
So that's one of the reasons why I hesitate to use the word magic. Although in the middle of a ritual, when I'm working with people and we're in a trance space, I will absolutely invoke the M word. Absolutely. Because, you know, in the moment of ritual trance, you have suspended your disbelief.
Mm-hmm.
Quieted that critic voice that says, ah, this is nothing. It doesn't really work. It's, you know, stupid. You've quieted that voice. And so you can be you're suggestible, and it's possible to say to someone, you have the power now. You can do the magic right now to make what you want to have happen, happen. Mm-hmm. And that goes all the way in, and it changes people.
Yeah.
So, honestly, I don't know how we conclude this conversation. It seems like it could go on and on. I'd be really interested to hear from our listeners what their opinions are. Because, yeah. You know, this is an interesting subject, not only because of all the reasons that we've been talking about it, but it's one of the biggest impediments that folks coming from the atheist community have mm-hmm. with coming into paganism, because they look at this magic making behavior and they think, my God, these people, they're totally superstitious. They're not grounded in reality.
Mm-hmm.
And you and I are here to say, no, we're naturalistic pagans. We believe in the universe of matter and energy behaving according to laws. And yet these practices can be beneficial and can do important things for us in our lives.
Yeah. Well, and that actually, I mean, I think this ties into a topic that could be a whole episode on its own, but I have heard some people express resistance to the word because it doesn't sound respectable. And there is a struggle to help make paganism more accepted within the broader culture. And
yeah.
When you use terms like magic or witch or spell or things like that, it makes it seem, for some people, it makes it seem childish.
Yes.
Or for other people, it also has, if they're coming from some of those real strong, you know, fundamentalist backgrounds in, you know, Christianity or things like that, where it might invoke the E word, evil.
Yes, it sounds sinister.
Yes. And so some people, I think, choose to use it because it is, that the words are so powerful in that way. And it is a little inflammatory, right?
Right.
And then other people shy away from it because of that, wanting to seem more respectable.
You know, you're really right. This is a whole other episode, because
yeah.
What you're talking about is respectability politics. And in the pagan community, particularly, respectability politics is a huge and complicated issue.
Mm-hmm.
Paganism by itself has always been transgressive. At least modern paganism has always been countercultural. And so to be transgressive and countercultural is naturally to oppose the the norms of the status quo. And so the question of whether we should become more appealing to those who are in the status quo is a very fraught and very sensitive topic. There are people who are really, really adamant that we should just do whatever we want to do, look however we want to look, say whatever we want to say, because we're free and we have the right to do that. And they're not wrong. The question is, does that actually advance us as a social movement?
Mm-hmm.
And
how does that influence the individuals who are facing discrimination and all of those questions?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's write that down. Let's come back to that one.
You bet. You bet.
Yeah.
So
this has been a little bit of a scattered episode, but it's, but I think we've got some good content in there. So as you were saying, it would be fantastic to hear from some of our listeners on their takes, you know, or your takes rather, speaking directly to you, our listeners.
Yes. Yes. Well, I just really like your mind, Arwin. And so, you know, wandering around in it for a while is just really, really a joy to me.
yours too.
We didn't necessarily stay on track a whole lot this time, but I think we got some good ideas out and we kind of kicked around our differences and similarities. So
yeah.
That was good.
Well, and I hope that folks got some value from it. So, or at least too. Enjoyed hanging out with us for this past half hour.
Don't forget, you can send questions or recommendations or comments, any of that, to thewonderpodcastqs@gmail.com. So thewonderpodcastqs@gmail.com. And we really look forward to hearing from you.
All right. Take care, everyone.
Thanks for a great conversation, Yucca.
Thanks, Mark.